because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio.
Good morning. We have got an emotional show coming up for you. We are going to be looking at happiness. We're going to be looking at a little bit of sadness and what makes you want to send things and share them around the internet. Joining me today to help us do that, we have psychology researcher Fiona Rutherford. How are you today?
Hi, I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Lovely to have you here in the studio. And also, as normal, we have our weekly experiment. Now, this week, all you're going to need is your ears. And maybe some friends, but that's kind of optional. So stay tuned for that and to get our brains working, as always. It's not really a psychology-related riddle, but I was thinking, you know, it's the end of summer. You've probably started school or your work or university again. Thinking back on that summer holiday. So what can travel all around the world but never leaves the corner? Say that once more. What can travel all around the world but never leaves the corner? If you think you know the answer, you can tweet us at Soho Radio. Any ideas there, Fiona?
Have no idea. Not yet.
Yeah, don't worry, you got the whole show to think of it. No, you've chosen the music for us today, so what will we be starting with?
I was thinking Bob Marley, Three Little Birds.
Very nice. And why do you want to start with that?
Because it's just a happy song and it always makes me smile, so yeah.
This week, it's really exciting because not only is Fiona a psychology researcher, she is actually working for BuzzFeed at the moment, writing some of their science articles. So it's not just talking about the news, you help make the news. What was your top story recently?
One story that went viral was this lady, a Taiwanese industrial designer called Sha Yao. She created a tableware set for people with Alzheimer's. And so I interviewed her last week and she told me about it and everyone seemed to love that and that article went really viral. So
yeah, it's so cool. So that she's called it like the Eat Well plate, hasn't she?
Yeah, so it's for anyone who has difficulties eating, really. So not just people with Alzheimer's, other forms of dementia as well, and palsies and sclerosis and things like that. So it's really helpful. I can tell you a bit about.
How she designed it to be specially helping them to eat.
Well, she was inspired by her grandma who was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And she told me that she felt really frustrated seeing her grandma slowly lose her ability to look after herself and eat by herself. So she came up with the Eat Well collection, which is just plates and bowls, something really simple, but with a scientific kind of backing to help support her and make eating a lot easier. So the bowls have blue inside, which helps to distinguish the food from the bowl, which is
It's like in cooking. If you cut yourself, you have to have a blue pasta.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
You don't really ever get blue food, so it's really easy to tell.
Yeah, so that really helps because one of the problems her grandma faced was confusing patterns on the bowl with food. So she'll try to scrape the patterns up and eat it, and obviously that was not working.
Off the plate.
Yeah. So So she made like a really bright coloured blue inside and then a red and yellow outside for the plates. And the red and yellow comes from the idea that they stimulate appetite.
Really?
So, yeah, those colours apparently stimulate.
That's amazing. Yeah. I guess lots of fruits are brightly coloured, like red and yellow. I just thought that was maybe to make them stand out, but maybe it's something to do with appetite as well, or because of that we've associated them with foods that we want to eat.
Because I was thinking about McDonald's the other day, why
it's
so brightly yellow and red.
Yeah,
so,
and Burger King as well.
Exactly.
That's so interesting.
So there's like a lot of psychology behind colour. So yeah.
So I'm going to start looking at all the fast food joints and be like, ooh, what are they doing?
They're making us hungry.
Papa John's, you've gone for green, like poor Joyce.
Yeah. So yeah, that was really clever and it really helped. Other things like the cutlery and cups. She made a cup with a really wide base so that her grandma didn't tip the cup over.
Oh, so it's like much more stable.
Yeah, more stable. And a straw securing lid so she can drink through a straw and not tip the cup.
That's so clever.
Yeah, so it was really, really cute and really nice. And it's become really popular. So yeah.
You say it went viral. Like, how many views does something need to get before you consider it to have gone viral?
So it's not really about the views, actually. It's about how quickly it's going through the internet and spreading, because that's what virality is. It's just how...
So it's more about how many locations it reaches?
Yeah, so if lots of people are sharing it really, really quickly... BuzzFeed has like a trending badge. You might have seen it on the website. So it's a red badge with a zigzag kind of arrow pointing upwards. And that shows that something's going through the internet really quickly. People are tweeting about it, sharing it on Facebook or other places. And people are really taking notice of it. And so that's how you know something's gone really viral.
What does it feel like when you see your article get that trending badge? Is it like, oh my God?
You feel happy that people are reading it. Like, you've spent some time researching it. So people are enjoying it. Things go viral for different reasons. Like, it could be a bad thing. It could be a good thing. It could be just because something's cute or funny. So there's not really... like a magical formula for making something go viral. Sometimes you just don't really know. But it feels really great that people are reading your stuff.
Yeah, it must be.
Yeah.
I mean, I know there's obviously no magic formula to make things go viral. Otherwise, you know, advertising companies would have cracked it a long time ago. But working at BuzzFeed, do they give you any top tips?
They actually try to remind us that we shouldn't focus on trying to make things viral, because there is no magic formula, but just to write things that you would want to read, and then it's more likely that somebody else would want to share that with their friends, and then they'll share it with their friends, and that's really how things go viral. So just finding things that you're interested in and
you think that's
that.
Cool, I would want to tell
that
to someone.
Exactly. And I think that's the only kind of tip there is, because there's nothing else that can... Some people are just good at like noticing, yeah, that might do really well or that won't do well.
It's like having a good eye.
Yeah, exactly.
How did you find this particular story?
This story is really weird, because I can't remember exactly how I found it. But it's just when you're looking through the internet and you find something cool and you just make a note of it. And I did, and I came back to it and I showed it to my editor, and she was like, yeah, go for it. Write about it, try to get hold of her. So I did, and people really liked it. So,
and are you just trawling like people's blogs and stuff, like smaller out? Like,
yeah, things? It's literally just looking around for cool things on Tumblr, on Twitter, or maybe like a friend shares something with you, or you see something on Facebook, like a video that's really funny, and you just want to share it with the world. So yeah.
Yeah, you have that power.
Yay.
Yeah, because one of your other ones that went viral recently, I mean, it's not so much news, but I guess it's kind of news. It's like, this is what people are talking about on Twitter.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved it. I want to share it with everyone. And this was your hashtag junk off article.
Yeah. It's funny because it started off as a small group of biologists just like sharing animal genitals.
Yeah, so for listeners that don't know, this is hashtag junk off is a group of people on Twitter showing pictures of animals' genitalia with like funny captions and the hashtag junk off. Check it out. It is absolutely hilarious.
Yes, very eye-opening. Yeah, just don't Google what a crocodile's penis looks like, because it's very scary.
Yeah, there was one that had like a penis that was split in two.
Yeah,
terrifying.
Snakes have two penises. And yeah, it looks really creepy. Someone described the crocodile genitals as looking like a clasped hand or like a turtle screaming, something like that. But yeah, it's really disturbing.
Oh god. Well, my favourite my favourite kind of sciencey hashtag that I came across the other day recently was hashtag science and movie quote.
Oh, yeah.
I love a good pun, and I especially love a sciencey pun. So these were my favourite three. On Wednesdays, we wear lab coats. And then, my name is Bond. covalent bond.
Oh, I love that one.
And finally, Luke, I am your supervisor. So if any of the listeners out there have a better hashtag science and movie quote, send them in or just tweet them yourself and tag us. And yeah, we'll see if we can get that one going as viral as Junkoff. But yeah, there's been a lot of interesting kind of changes towards science in social media. You found a really cool news story as well, didn't you, Amna, like along this topic?
Yeah, this one is a few weeks old, but it's just like, what does an engineer look like? And I think it's quite cool because people are taking to social media to kind of change our perception of what a scientist is. You know, it's not just an old white man. It's like a lot more diverse, and people are like tweeting in their pictures and things. And it was really interesting because there's been like a lot of controversy around, you know, breaking that gender barrier in science and trying to make it more equal and trying to make it also more racially diverse. And a lot of people have just, yeah, because there was what a scientist looks like. That was like quite huge in 2012, and there's a Tumblr page now. People still submit to it, just them in their, you know, in their labs or in the field. And I think that's quite cool because like younger people will see that and think, okay, that person looks like me, and
I can be a scientist too.
As well. Yeah,
I don't have to be a white man in a lab coat.
Exactly, and I think it's quite cool. People are taking to social media in a
changing perceptions.
Yeah,
because that engineer one started originally, it was just a girl posting a picture of herself, and then loads of people were like, what?
Yeah.
Girl engineer? Does that exist? Yeah. We're getting distracted. So a few other bits of proper news. So not that wasn't proper. as in like, rather than just chatting about hashtags. There's a man with a tiny brain who appears to have like completely normal functions. Literally, his brain, so they did a scan. He went into hospital for mild weakness in his left leg, like nothing super serious, but they scanned his brain anyway and found that he had this huge sort of ventricle of fluid which had been like pressing out on his brain and squished it to the edges and reduced it by 50-75%. Like, they couldn't be sure on the volume, so that's why it's a bit of a range. So that is quite a lot smaller than most people's brains. But he had an IQ score of 75. Now, it is below average. Average is 100. But it's not at all considered, like, disabled or anything. You know, he's married, he's got a job, he's got two kids. And yet, the whole of his brain was reduced. All the different lobes, like frontal, temporal, and these are control motion, sensibility, language. And it shows how incredibly plastic the brain is. Like, this is a term for how the brain could kind of rewire itself. And because the swelling had grown really, really slowly since he was a child, rather than just having like a chunk cut out of his brain, it was slowly being made smaller. And so different parts were taking up the functions that were being lost. And he retained like pretty normal brain function, which is just crazy.
I know, it's absolutely amazing because you hear these kind of different stories of someone who only like had his brain stem, I think, and his cerebellum, and that was pretty much it, and just survived and lived.
Well, there was a girl who had half her brain removed because of a rare disease called encephalitis, which was giving her loads of seizures. And I think she was about 10 when she had it removed. Now she's 15 and has like a completely normal life and is like getting really high grades at school and like has only got half a brain.
Oh my god. Yeah, I think like you said, it's quite interesting. The question really should be is how much of our brain do we need to survive? And it also shows, like, I feel really bad for neuroscientists because we just don't know anything about the brain.
That's what I was thinking. We know a lot, but we've got so much more to understand about humans and the brain. So
yeah, it's about space and the brain. Yeah, so like the frontiers that we still don't get.
Yeah.
And Amna, final update story from you.
So last week we talked about the female Viagra pill, and it was quite interesting. But a new story has come out saying, you know, you're not allowed to take this pill with alcohol because when they did tests on it, there were like quite severe side effects. But someone looked at this test and found that they were all mostly done on men.
That's ridiculous.
For a pill that's going to be exclusively used by women. So actually, we have no idea what it's going to do to women if they drink and take that pill.
And you would have thought if you're taking, you know, like a pill to increase libido, that drinking is something you'd want to be doing.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, on that note, what is our next song, Fiona?
Santa Gold?
Santa Gold?
Yeah.
And why have you chosen Disparity?
Because actually I was going through my playlist yesterday and I hadn't listened to her for ages and I was like, oh, I love her. So I thought I'd share that with everyone. But if we go, we go together.
that was Disparate Youth by Santa Gold. And at the start of the show, we asked you what can travel all around the world but never leaves the corner. And I'm going to give you a clue. It's not a very big clue, but it is a thing. It's not like radio waves or something like that, is it? It's an actual thing that you can touch. So that is your clue. And tweet us in at Soho Radio if you think you've got the answer. And now it is time for our experiment. Now, this week I told you all you need is your ears and maybe some friends. And what we're going to be doing is listening to an auditory illusion. I'm not going to tell you too much more about it, except that I'm going to play you some notes and they're going to come in two pairs. So like one note, then another. And you need to decide if you think the notes are ascending or descending. So we'll play them all and then see, and us in the studio are going to play it as well. See if we all thought the same thing. So here goes. Okay, so what did we think to that for the first one, guys?
Ascending.
Do you want to hear it again?
Yeah.
I'm going to need to hear it again. That is fine. Okay, here we go. So this is the first one. What do we think?
Oh, changed my mind now.
I think it's descending.
Yeah, yeah. Descending. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was descending as well. Okay, next one. What did you think?
Ascending this time.
I'm going to stick with descending.
I thought ascending too, really? But interesting that we're not agreeing. And the final one.
Ascending.
I think descending.
Really? Descending.
Oh, wow.
I'm just, that's all I'm hearing. Everything's
all
just
going down. Yeah, this is something called the tritone paradox, and it's really interesting. It's an optical illusion where you're hearing, so the first note that you hear and then the second note you hear, they are a tritone apart, which is half an octave. So you could be going up or down and you'd reach the same note and it's the same distance. And the way that they're formulated, because obviously they're made on a computer, means that you don't know exactly which octave they're in. So you could kind of tell, you can tell the jump, but you can't, it's, there's no right or wrong answer as to which way it is. And they did this study on loads of different people. And what they found was actually there were quite a lot of cultural differences as to whether you thought it was ascending or descending. And they think it's to do with kind of the language you've grown up with. Mm-hmm. Or like particularly, I think there were two different villages in China that were really different. And because that's because they had kind of different way that the tones that they spoke in were at different pitches anyway. And they've even found like the pitch of your own voice might make it, you might think something is ascending or descending relative to the pitch of your own voice. And I just think that it's really fascinating. Yeah. That like we think, you know, what we hear all the time, but actually we might be having quite a different experience with someone else. And this has also been used in something called the shepherd tone illusion. Yeah, when you hear like, you know, you're in a club and there's that song and it's rising and rising and rising and it's not dropping yet. Yeah. That is using these. It's using these to kind of tritone apart, and it just keeps stacking one on top of another and then dropping the top one down to the lower octave. But your brain doesn't tell that. It's like in an escalator, like it goes up and then goes down.
Mm.
But to your brain, it just thinks it's going up forever and ever and ever. So this is what that sounds like. It's literally just these tones, and the way that they're being put together makes them seem like they're ascending and ascending, even though they're not. It's crazy. Like, this track is 5 minutes long. I could keep playing that for 5 minutes and it would never stop. It gets quite stressful after a while.
It's getting stressful already.
Stressful. That's not even 30 seconds. Okay, I'm going to fade that out. So, listeners at home, let us know what you got. Did you get three descendings like Hamna? Were you a bit of a mix? And try that again with your friends and see, like, get yourselves to write it down. Like, what do you all think? So short and sweet there, but on to the next song.
I think it's time for some Daft Punk.
Let's see if they employ the shepherd tone illusion as well. So this is Lose Yourself to Dance. You don't get a chance to take a break this often. I know your life is speeding and it isn't stopping. Here, take my shirt and just go ahead and wipe up on the sweat, sweat, sweat. Lose yourself to dance. Lose yourself to dance.
dance. Lose yourself to dance.
Been some eloquent chair dancing going on in the studio. Daft Punk getting us going. Well, we, as I said, this was going to be an emotional show. And if that hasn't moved you to be dancing, maybe this next section will help you to feel happy. So, Fiona, you are a psychology researcher and you spent some time working in a clinical psychology, didn't you?
Yeah.
On this thing called the Wellbeing Project. Mm. So could you tell us about that? Because it sounds absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, sure. So a few years ago, I was an honorary assistant clinical psychologist and our team came across Action for Happiness, which is a movement of like positive thinking and well-being. And we thought it was really cool and it was new at the time because it just started in 2010. So we really wanted to see whether we can kind of implement that into what we were doing at the hospital with some of the patients to see if we can make them happy and improve their well-being. So Action for Happiness is just a group of people who use the most recent scientific research on happiness and well-being, and they've created 10 keys to happier living. So I could go through the 10.
Yeah, tell us all.
So the first thing is giving. So that's just doing things for other people. They found that that improves your happiness. So it could be anything, like just buying your friend a coffee or a present. Anything. Just, it doesn't have to be with money. Just something small can improve your happiness.
Yeah, I saw on their website that they had a study saying altruistic behaviour has been shown to release endorphins, which is obviously a chemical in your brain that makes you feel good.
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the next one is relating. So that's just connecting with people. So maybe talking to friends that you haven't spoken to for ages or asking someone how they are. That can help improve your own well-being. Exercise, everyone knows that just like looking after yourself, keeping healthy is a good way of looking, of being happy.
Exercise releases endorphins too.
Yeah, exactly.
My favourite Legally Blonde quote. Exercise releases endorphins. Endorphins make you happy. Happy people just don't kill their husbands.
Yeah, that's a good one, I think. Appreciating, so just noticing the world around you. We were talking about how just walking down the street, everyone's either looking at their phones or just looking straight ahead of them. But sometimes if you look up, you can see things that you don't really notice before. Like in central London, sometimes you can look up and see like really amazing things, like the buildings are really nice and you haven't noticed that before. And that can just change your mood and change the way you think. Trying new things is the fifth one. So just learning something new every day, reading something or going to a club, like just like a book club or something.
Yeah, I can see that, because when you feel like you've learned something, there's a huge sense of achievement.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Progress, and those are both good feelings.
Yeah, so just trying to learn something, maybe sharing it with other people.
That and then you're relating as well.
Yeah. The sixth one is direction. So that's always having a goal, something to look forward to that can increase your happiness. Resilient, so just understanding that life is full of ups and downs, but just finding ways to deal with it when life isn't going so well, just finding ways to bounce back. So thinking about what's helped before, maybe talking to a friend or taking some time out, going on a holiday or taking a break. That's really important. Emotion, which is just looking at emotion in a different way. So understanding that all emotions are just normal, feeling happy, feeling sad, but then taking a positive approach to that. So just thinking about your emotions in a different way. Acceptance, being comfortable with who you are and just finding ways to appreciate yourself and loving yourself. And meaning, so being part of something bigger, so joining a group or a society, maybe at uni or something like that, can help you feel a lot better in your life. So those are the 10 things. So me and some of the researchers at the hospital, we created a 10-week program based on these things. So every week we took one, like giving, and we thought of ways that we can give to others, like some old clothes that you had, just giving it to a charity or something like that. And my favourite one was appreciating, so just noticing the world around you. So just going out for a walk and looking around and going places that you haven't been before, maybe taking a different route to work or something like that.
I knew someone who had recently had a kid, and that, like, he said going for a walk with his two-year-old just made him see the world in such a different way. He's like, yeah. Normally I'm just like walking down the street and I'm just, you know, I'm just walking and, you know, take my kid along, and it's like, oh my god, there's birds, oh my god, there's a stick, like everything is amazing. And he's like and now I try and channel my inner two-year-old.
Yeah, kids notice everything, like they're always looking around, they're always curious.
Yeah,
so we can learn a lot from kids, I think.
And so you did this like pilot program with the patients in your hospital,
yeah.
And like, how did you kind of measure their happiness? How did you see if it worked?
So measuring happiness is really difficult because it's very subjective, but well, according to the Action for Happiness website, that our own self-reported happiness is related to other kinds of ways of measuring happiness, like, and well-being, so like blood pressure and things like that. So it is like positively correlated, and the patients did report that they felt happier after the 10-week program, and they thought about things in a different way, which was good. So
yeah. And they've actually, like, because that was a pilot study, they've actually made this like a full-on program now,
yeah,
haven't they?
So they're doing it in the hospital, so, which is great. And it's just a small kind of a thing that anyone can do, really. So we're just like really proud of that it hit off. So yeah
no, it's, I think actually, like, maybe it's just the age I've got to now, or it actually is becoming a bigger thing, but I keep hearing all about mindfulness. You've got like the Headspace app, and
yeah, mindfulness is become huge. Like, it's everywhere now, everyone's talking about mindfulness.
Yeah, I saw on their website that recent research has shown that an 8-week mindfulness meditation class can lead to structural brain changes affecting structures associated with self-awareness, compassion and introspection. So how cool is that? Like, some science that shows that mindfulness is actually really working to kind of alter your brain and the way you sense the world.
Very cool.
Well, from happiness to sadness, stay tuned, because in our next section we'll be looking at why humans are the only ones to cry emotional tears. But before that, what's our next song?
I think Lana Del Rey.
And this is Born to Die.
Don't make me sad, don't cry. Sometimes life is not enough and the road gets tough. I don't know why. Keep making me laugh. Let's go get high. The road is long, we carry on. Try to have fun in the meantime. Come take a walk on the outside. Let me kiss you hard in the pouring rain. You're like a girl's insane. So choose your
Lana Del Rey and Born to Die. So Fiona, you've been studying a master's in evolutionary psychology, and your research dissertation is going to look into why humans are the only animals to cry emotional tears. This sounds absolutely fascinating. Tell us more about it.
Yeah, so emotional tearing is unique to humans, or thought to be unique to humans. No one's really found evidence of other animals crying emotional tears. So
do they cry other tears?
Well, there's three types of tears. So one type is just always in our eyes, to lubricate it.
Like when you blink.
Yeah,
actually
exactly.
Washing them. Yeah.
Yeah. The second type is due to irritation. So like if something goes in your eye, you'll start to like produce tears to kind of clean it. Get something out of your eye. But then the third type of tear is emotional tears, and that's what I'm looking at, emotional expression. So why humans cry, because they're happy when they're sad or when they're laughing, so
or frustrated,
yeah exactly, or angry.
What got you into it? Like, why did you choose this as your topic?
Well, because evolutionary psychology focuses on what's unique to humans, and tears are really under-researched, so I thought, why not look at those, just look at tears and see why we actually cry. What's the purpose of it? Because I thought that was quite interesting.
How are you planning to, because I know you haven't started the experiments yet, but how are you planning to look into it?
Well, we're going to get lots of people to, well, this is just a brief overview, which I can't go into too much detail.
No,
but,
I understand.
We're going to get people to look at pictures of tears and people without tears and see if that changes the way that they respond. So we're looking at the reasons behind tears, but in a way that so we're looking at moral decisions and whether somebody with tears changes the way that people treat them. Sorry, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, kind of changes their perception of the situation.
Yeah, so that's what we're looking at. And we're looking at other facial expressions as well. So, yeah, that's what we're going to look at so far.
Ah, oh, sounds so cool. Mm. It reminds me a little bit of... we were talking the other day, me and Amna, about how, like, eye contact is something that maybe could be unique to humans as well, like in the kind of like emotional sense of eye contact. Amna mentioned there was this piece called The Artist is Present. I know, do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, it's really interesting. It was presented at the Museum of Art in New York, and essentially the artist sat down, and she's quite famous for doing quite provocative art.
This was Marina Abramovic.
Yeah, so I basically got up ridiculously early and just watched this documentary on Netflix. It was amazing. And she sat there just completely still, and she did this for 3 months, and people could come down and sit opposite her, and then they just stared into her eyes. She just sat there and just stared at them. And a lot of people got really emotional. Like, they started crying and they were really moved by the experience. And it was just because she, you know, someone sat there and gave you completely undivided attention.
Yeah, there does seem to be something kind of really intimate about looking at someone. Because there was another study where people were, this guy got strangers to meet in a room and go through 36 questions, which he designed to build intimacy. And like, it was written about by someone in the New York Times, and she had tried it out with a friend, and, you know, it was billed as like the 36 questions that make you fall in love, because of these two strangers, one pair did end up getting married afterwards. Wow. At the end of that, you stare into each other's eyes for 4 minutes, having gone through like all of these questions and shared so much. And in the lady who wrote the article, like sharing it on her blog, she said, at first you laugh and you feel kind of awkward and nervous, but then you just kind of really relax into it, and actually it was just such a unique experience, just look into someone's eyes for that long.
It's very intense.
Yeah. And researchers at the University of Urbino in Italy actually found that if you looked for longer, like 10 minutes into someone's eyes in a dimly lit room, you started to have kind of like out-of-body experiences and see their faces kind of morph. I don't know if that's just an optical illusion, like when you look at something and if you stare at it for too long, you start to see like blurry dots in your vision.
Yeah, so it was a really funny research published in The Psychiatry Research, and he paired 20 people, got them to sit down and then just stare into each other's eyes for 10 minutes. And a lot of them reported like seeing different animals. Like some people's, the most common was lions, like people's faces were turning into lions. And yeah, so these reporters from courts kind of sat down and were like, okay, is this just silly? And they did it, and the reporter who was writing the article ended up crying herself. Like, she didn't know why, she was just getting really emotional, and there's just like loads of tears coming down her eye. And then she also saw someone turn into a lion, and then she asked her colleague, what did you see? And the colleague goes, you looked like death.
Oh my god.
I'm sorry, she tried to not take that personally.
I mean, yeah, like crying and feeling sad, I guess it's hard to tell that in other animals, but
yeah,
it does seem to be uniquely important to humans.
One theory says that we cry in order to gain like social support from people, so that's why children cry, because they can't really express what they want. So but in adults it's more complicated, because we're more aware of like what crying does and how
and
that affects
it, and how
other
it gets perceived.
Yeah,
like, is it weakness, or
exactly
is it, you know, like girls cry so boys can't cry,
or yeah,
there's all these other thoughts about it mixed up.
Exactly, and it differs culturally as well. So in some cultures, men cry more than women, and in other cultures, like in Western culture, it seems as though women cry more than men. So because of societal pressures and other things. But yeah, so it's an area of research that needs to be looked at a bit more, I think, in terms of the psychology behind it.
And, well, Inside Out, which I know is not the most, you know, scientifically, it's actually based on quite a lot of science. I read an article where they spent a lot of time with some psychology researchers. Mm. But what really struck me about that, you know, they strip it back to 5 main emotions in this girl's head. For anyone that hasn't seen the film, you're in Riley's head, and the main characters are her emotions: joy, sadness, anger, disgust, and fear. And how those emotions kind of come into play and shape the actions and stuff that she does. And joy is like the main one. So most of the time she's quite a happy person. Occasionally she gets angry, or disgust will make her like not want to do something, and fear will kind of protect her. And they're all a bit like, we're not really sure what sadness does. She just mopes around and is really annoying. We don't like it when Riley's sad. But the whole film centers around Riley moving house, and she, you know, she's not that happy anymore. She hasn't got any of her friends or the things that normally make her happy, and eventually runs away from home. And sadness and joy have kind of got lost from her head for a bit, and without sadness she stops being able to feel anything. Mm. It's like her brain kind of shuts down a bit. She's like, she's feeling angry, she's feeling disgusted at the move, she's feeling a bit scared about running away, but she's not feeling happy, she's not feeling sad, and she's just numb.
Mm.
And that really struck me, that actually to be able to feel happy you have to be able to feel sad. And yeah, without feeling sad, she didn't care about her parents, she didn't care about her friends, and it was only when she felt sad again that she cared about them and wanted to make that better.
Yeah,
absolutely fascinating.
Oh, it's also an amazing film and everyone needs to go see it.
I need to see it. I haven't seen it.
Love it.
But yeah, it reminds me of the sort of balance that you need in life. You know, like, you can't experience hot without cold. So you can't really experience happiness without sadness and things like that.
And yeah, really briefly, what other kind of stuff do you look at on your masters?
Well, we look at animal behaviour and cognitive neuroscience. Anything to do with human beings and just trying to understand human nature fundamentally, and answer all the why questions that don't get asked, because a lot of science is about how does this work, and like, how does this happen, how does our hand move, and how do we perceive things. Mm. But evolutionary psychology looks at why do we perceive things in the way we do, like that illusion you, yeah, were talking about. What's the purpose behind that? Why do we all experience different things and not just the same thing? So yeah, it's really interesting, but very new. It's a very new field, so there's a lot to do.
Yeah, oh, absolutely fascinating. Sadly, we are coming to the end of our show, and all that's left for me to do is reveal the answer to our riddle. So I said to you at the beginning, what can travel around the world but never leaves the corner? What's your best guess?
Oh, I have no idea. I haven't thought about it.
No, I'm absolutely stumped.
I was stumped too when I first heard this, and I thought of a lot of things. The answer is a stamp. Goes all around the world, never leaves the corner of the letter.
Yeah. Oh.
That makes sense.
I will leave you with that. And finally, what's going to be our final song to play out on, Fiona?
I think the Eagles, because they're the best.
And this is Hotel California. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you to our listeners. We will see you again next week, or speak to you again next week. Bye. Then she lit up a candle, and she showed